Hello, it's Father Nix. I'm here at a traditional Latin Mass parish in Texas, and today is the feast of St. Josaphat, a 17th century Polish monk, Eastern bishop, and martyr who died trying to bring union between the Catholic Church and the Orthodox churches. Today, we're actually going to talk about the history of the Eastern churches, and it's going to be kind of a little redo of the sermon that I gave at this parish today. It's almost 10 p.m. at night, so please forgive a little bit slower talking here, but I think there'll be a wealth of information here for people who have heard the term divine liturgy but don't exactly understand what it means to be Eastern Orthodox or what it means to be an Eastern Rite Catholic. Most people out there know that Jesus gave the Catholic Church to the 12 apostles to spread on every continent of the world. Everybody knows that Jesus, the divine bridegroom, can only have one bride, which is the church. And what happened as the church spread everywhere is the apostolic roots of the liturgy and the rites of all the different sacraments all got spread with the same doctrine, but just with different emphases and very, very small additions through time from the area. But as Father Ripperger says, the traditional Latin Mass is actually organically apostolic. One thing I mentioned in this sermon to this traditional Latin Mass parish today in Texas is that many people call the traditional Latin Mass the Tridentine Mass. And that's okay, that's not exactly wrong. But it kind of implies that it was invented around the 16th century. A more accurate term is the Gregorian Mass, because Pope St. Gregory the Great really crystallized a good probably 80 to 90% of what we already have today in the 6th century. And one of the things that you're going to hear me talk about in the Eastern churches is that many of these Eastern rites were crystallized in the 6th century. But I have a theory, I'm kind of working on this, that essentially all of the rites were given by Christ to the apostles with very small, accidental, never substantial changes before 1960. And so what we have is what Jesus gave was one divine liturgy to St. Andrew, which went to modern-day Turkey, and this spread, and what Peter would have offered, and certainly Paul also in Rome. There's really no reason to believe that the Mass, the liturgy offered by St. Peter and St. Paul in Rome had any substantial difference from what became the Roman Rite by the 6th century, except for very, very small accidental changes. We know that the Roman canon was being prayed in Greek by the 3rd century in Rome, and was probably took about 120 years to translate to the Latin. But the Roman canon was pretty well crystallized with a lot of those martyrs already by the 3rd century, even though, strangely, what I'm saying, the traditional Latin Mass was prayed in Greek in Rome in the 3rd century. But I am very convinced, as Father Ripperger says, that at least it was organically apostolic. What he means by that is all of the rites of the Catholic Church that we're going to talk about today, probably had their liturgies, at least in seminal form, with only very small, superficial changes through the ages, until the 20th century. The Catholic Church has 24 rites, but we actually call them churches. So even though Christ only has one bride, which is the Catholic Church, we're actually going to learn how there is one Latin church and 23 Eastern churches. So let me say that again. There's one Latin church and 23 Eastern churches. Now, the good news of this is simply that the apostles were diverse and they went to diverse lands. The bad news of this is that there was a schism. Most of you know about in 1054 there was a great schism. So let's go back in history. Jesus gives the sacraments and the doctrine to the apostles. They spread this all over the globe. And there is relative unity with some minor to major speed bumps up until the 8th century. Then there's some major speed bumps in the 8th century. And then in 1054, we have the beginning of schism. Now, schism is when you keep the faith but don't keep the unity. Let me say that again. Schism is when you keep the faith but don't keep the unity. And this formed what we now call Orthodox churches. Orthodox churches were formed beginning around 1054 at what is called the Great Schism, and seem to continue after that. I'm not exactly sure of all the dates, but they left full union with Rome. Now, some Orthodox today will say that the Patriarch of Rome, the Pope, is the first among equals, and some are so extreme, like the monks on Mount Athos in Greece, they don't even believe that we Catholics have a valid baptism. Now, today's the Feast of St. Josaphat, again, this bishop, 17th century bishop, and he was one of many who worked to bring the Orthodox back into union. And through the years, many of these Orthodox churches did come back into union with the Catholic Church, the Latin Church, with Rome. And this is where, one place where we get these 23 Eastern churches. We're going to talk about the umbrella under the Catholic Church, and then under that umbrella is, say, the Byzantine Church, and under that we're going to hear Hungarian, Albanian churches. But the main thing to remember here is that for every church that came into union, there's more or less an analogous Orthodox church that did not come into union with Rome. The Eastern churches that we now call the Eastern Catholic Churches are derogatorily termed uniate churches. So don't call any of your Byzantine Catholic friends uniates. They don't really like it. But it's a very short term to demarcate an Eastern Orthodox from an Eastern Catholic. Now, some Eastern Catholics will say they're just Orthodox in union with Rome. Other people who are Byzantine Catholics highlight the fact that they're Catholics. Now, in some sense, it's all kind of, there's some politics of the word game that can come in there, because all Eastern Catholics are actually Catholic and they're called to be Orthodox. We actually use the word Orthodox in the Roman canon, even in Latin, for those of us who pray the Latin Mass. So really, all Catholics are called to be both Orthodox and Catholic. It's just some of the Eastern Catholics like to call themselves Orthodox in union with Rome. But we Western Catholics should also be Orthodox in the sense that we should be faithful to apostolic teaching. Okay, but we're absolutely called, as St. Ignatius of Antioch says, he definitely puts the first of all churches to be Rome by the year 110 AD. And he was the best friend of St. John, who wrote five books of the Bible and is really one of the two great apostolic heroes to the East. So if we read St. Ignatius of Antioch, we definitely have to understand that union with Rome is important. Okay, what are these Eastern churches that are in union with Rome? Again, there's 23 Eastern churches and one Latin church. Now, the one Latin church that most of my listeners belong to is 99% of the Catholics in the world. And then the 23 Eastern Catholic churches comprise maybe 1% of the Catholics of the world. Now, there's a few different umbrellas here, and one different group of Eastern Catholics is called the Byzantine Ritual Family. I'm actually going to put this up on the blog. So if you're listening on the podcast, try to go to the blog if you want to see a really cool tree explaining the Eastern churches. Under the Byzantine Ritual Family, we have the Byzantine Rite, which includes the Albanian Greek Catholic Church, the Belarusian Greek Catholic Church, the Bulgarian Greek Catholic Church, the Byzantine Greek Byzantine Catholic Church, the Greek Catholic Church of Croatia and Serbia, the Hungarian Greek Catholic Church, the Italo-Albanian Greek Catholic Church, the Macedonian Greek Catholic Church, the Melkite Greek Catholic Church, the Romanian Greek Catholic Church, the Russian Greek Catholic Church, the Ruthenian Byzantine Catholic Church, the Slovak Byzantine Catholic Church, and the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church. Okay, next family, there's the Edessan Ritual Family. This includes the East Syriac Rite, two different churches, the Chaldean Catholic Church, which is based in Iraq, and the Syro-Malabar Catholic Church. Okay, then we also have another family. If you're looking at what I put up on the blog, it's green. The Antiochian Ritual Family includes the West Syriac Rite, and those that use the West Syriac Rite is the Maronite Catholic Church, the Syriac Catholic Church, and the Syro-Malankara Catholic Church, which I believe is based in India. Then we have the Alexandrian Ritual Family. This is the African-based church. The Coptic Rite includes the Coptic Catholic Church, and then the Ge'ez Rite, which includes both the Eritrean Catholic Church and the Ethiopian Catholic Church. So that's the Catholic Church Rite that you're going to find on the northeast horn of Africa there. And then finally, we have the Armenian Ritual Family, which includes the Armenian Catholic Church. And there's Christians in Armenia that go back to the first century. One of the apostles actually died in Armenia. Okay, now what's interesting is, again, we had all of these in more or less union for the first millennium of Christianity. Then you had the schism in 1054, when a lot of these churches started to break off, and then some of them have come back. I just listed the 23 Eastern Catholic churches, and then we have the one big Latin church. Now, the Latin church, I guess we could talk really briefly about the different rites in there. The Roman rite obviously includes the traditional Latin Mass. In the 20th century, there was also added the Anglican use and the ordinary form of the Mass. A little more ancient is the Gallican rites, the Ambrosian rite, Braga rite, Lyonese rite, and Mozarabic rite. And then we also have to remember that the different congregations of the Catholic Church have very small, kind of very tweaked changes to the traditional Latin Mass and the Benedictine rite, the Carmelite rite, the Carthusian rite, the Cistercian rite, the Dominican rite, and the Premonstrantian rite, which is basically modern-day Norbertines. And almost all these look like the traditional Latin Mass. Unfortunately, the Cistercians, or no, that was a Carthusian. Most of these look like the traditional Latin Mass, at least if they're doing their old rite of their groups. Okay, one more thing before we get to St. Josephat that I just want to highlight is that I said earlier that all of these Eastern Catholic churches have so-called they wouldn't actually call themselves a sister church, but a reflection in the Orthodox Church. Some of these do. So, for example, the Orthodox Church has the Church of Alexandria, which is kind of analogous to our Coptic, Eritrean, and Ethiopian Catholic churches, because the Orthodox Church of Alexandria, their patriarchate is based in Alexandria, Egypt, but it includes dioceses all through Africa. Then the Orthodox churches also have what's called the Church of Antioch, and that includes all of the Middle East, so that's kind of analogous, my listeners to hear, kind of analogous to our Chaldean Catholics. So in other words, what I'm saying is you can find Catholics in Iraq who are worshiping according to the Chaldean rite, and then you can find Orthodox in the Middle East, including Iraq, that belong to the Orthodox Church of Antioch and fall under the Antiochian Patriarchate. Then you have the big one, the Church of Russia, which was established in 1589. That's the Orthodox Church of Russia, established in 1589. But, of course, we also have Russian Catholics. So they worship very similarly, but the difference between the Orthodox Church of Russia adherents and the Catholic Russian Catholics is the latter group. The Russian Catholics are obedient to Rome and in union with Rome. Okay, then we have the Church of Serbia. That is the Orthodox Church of Serbia, which was established in 1219, and that's kind of analogous to the, let me find it right here, the Greek Catholic Church of Croatia and Serbia. Again, that's the Greek Catholic Church of Croatia and Serbia. There's the Orthodox Church of Romania, and there's also Romanian Eastern Catholics. Now, again, they don't worship together, but you would find their divine liturgy to be similar, I believe. Then you have the Orthodox Church of Bulgaria, and if you listen to the 24 Eastern churches I mentioned, we also have the Bulgarian Greek Catholic Church. Very small. I'm pretty sure it's very, very small adherence in those. We got the Orthodox Church of the Orthodox Church of Greece, but on the sister side, the Catholic side, or reflection of that, we have both. We have the Greek Byzantine Catholic Church, and then there's an Orthodox Church of Albania. If you listen to the 23 Eastern Catholic churches, then there's the sister church of the Albanian Greek Catholic Church. And then there's also the Church of Czech and Slovak Islands, established in 1951, and there's a similar one on the Catholic side of that. Okay, but then there's also some that we're not going to actually see line up exactly. Like you may have heard me say that there's a Italo-Albanian Greek Catholic Church, and there certainly are some Orthodox churches sprinkled through Albania, but it falls under a different patriarchate. And then there's also some on the Orthodox side we're not going to see a sister church among Catholics. For example, the Orthodox Church in America was established in 1970, and we don't have anything called the American Catholic Church. However, there was an interesting document by Pope Leo XIII warning us against forming that, that he wrote around 1900, against Americanism. Okay, so all of this is to say that a lot, well, all of these rites, including the traditional Latin Mass, but not the Novus Ordo, all go back to apostolic foundations of the of what Christ gave to the apostles. And God in his mercy obviously kept the Novus Ordo valid. I'm not saying it's not valid. It's obviously valid. But one of the things I said to the people today is who worship at this traditional Latin Mass in Texas, I said, you have the grace and should have the desire for praying for the union with these churches precisely because you're worshiping at an apostolic liturgy. You're worshiping in a liturgy that doesn't go back to the Council of Trent, doesn't just go back to Pope St. Gregory the Great in the 6th century. This is most likely, at least in seminal form, the very Mass given by Christ to Peter, and probably Peter to Paul if it wasn't directly given by Christ to Paul or by the other apostles there. And so we, and those who go to the Novus Ordo, I know I have a lot of listeners who go to the Novus Ordo, they should also be praying for unity between all of these churches, because this was Christ's final dying wish. You know, everybody knows that when someone is dying, you should always listen to their wish. And Christ's dying wish was for unity between these churches. And this is where traditional Catholics have to realize the power and the glory of these Eastern apostolic liturgies, of these divine liturgies, that they can be in union with Rome without attending the traditional Latin Mass. They can be attending the Chaldean Rite and the Albanian Rite and the Greek Rite and still be full Catholics through and through and through. And so we're not praying that everyone who worships at a, say, a Ruthenian Catholic church starts to pray at the traditional Latin Mass, but we are praying for all of the Orthodox to come into union with the church and essentially become uniate Catholics, as much as they don't like that term. We want everyone to be in union with Rome, to be in union with the West, even if their worship is not Western, because they do have an apostolic liturgy. And this is Christ's dying desire. The line that actually was in the Gospel for St. Josaphat today came from St. John's Gospel. It says, I'm just going to read one line from it. It's John chapter 10, verse 16. Jesus says, "And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd." So what I want everyone out there to know is the Orthodox do have valid sacraments. All of their seven sacraments are totally valid because they have apostolic succession in their priesthood that goes all the way back to the initial apostles, but they are not in union with Rome, and therefore they're schismatic because they've kept the faith but not the unity. They would, of course, claim the opposite for themselves versus us, that they might say we didn't keep the faith or the unity, but we Catholics believe that the Orthodox have kept the faith, but not the unity, and that we want them to be in union as Christ's dying wish was this. But they all have valid sacraments. So whenever I'm driving by an Orthodox church, I always cross myself because the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ is truly in all of those Orthodox churches that I just mentioned there. You might notice that their worship is very similar to Eastern Catholics, and so you also might meet some Eastern Catholic priests who are married. They're valid, and not only are they not schismatic, but they're fully worshiping as Catholics of one of the 23 Eastern Catholic churches, just not the Latin church that most of my listeners listen to. So know the demarcation lines of what we're praying for. We're praying for unity in the heart of the mystical body of Christ, but we're not praying that everyone in the Eastern Rites comes to the traditional Latin Mass. I just pray that everyone attend an apostolic liturgy that was established by Christ or the apostles there. That's my prayer, but ultimately my prayer is that every Christian comes into union with the Catholic Church and goes to heaven. So I'm just going to close today with the words of the old Divine Office on the life of St. Josaphat. It'll just take a minute. It describes his life and his death, this great saint who died for the union of all the Eastern churches. He tried to bring the Orthodox in the church, or he tried to bring the Orthodox to union with the Roman Catholic Church, and they killed him. But he is a perfect example of what has been called breathing with both lungs, because again, he was a Polish monk and then became an Eastern Rite a Catholic bishop, and then finally is a martyr. Today's Mass was in red. So this is what the Divine Office for the 14th of November describes for St. Josaphat. Josaphat Kunchevitz was born of noble Catholic parents at Vladimir in Volhynia. As a child, when he heard his mother speaking of the Passion of Christ, he received in his heart a wound from an arrow coming from the side of the image of Christ crucified. When he was 20, he was professed among the cloistered monks of St. Basil. Soon he was made archimandrite of Vilna, and then archbishop of Plolocs, and showed himself a model of all virtues. A zealous promoter of the unity of the Greek with the Latin Church, he called innumerable heretics back to the bosom of their mother, the Church. Having gone to Vitebsk on pastoral visitation, of his own accord he went out to meet the schismatics who were seeking to kill him and who had already invaded the archiepiscopal residence. "My children," he said, "if you have anything against me, here I am." With that they rushed at him, beat and stabbed him, delivered the death blow with an axe, and threw his body into the river. The first to benefit from the martyr's blood were those very parricides, that's one who kills their father. Condemned to death, nearly all of them adjured their schism and repented of their crime. Pope Urban VIII gave Josaphat the honors of being blessed, and Pope Pius IX added to the number of saints this first promoter of the unity of the Church among the Easterners. God bless you, and please pray for me.